Hi, this is Rachel, producer and one of the hosts of the Five-ish Fangirls. We are a weekly, all-female hosted pop culture podcast where we discuss movies, TV shows, books, and other pop culture things that excite us. We've been podcasting for almost 4 years. I'm in Indiana, Chrissy's in Utah, Holly's in Wisconsin, and Brittany's in Pennsylvania, so we record everything via Skype. As much as we enjoy our weekly discussions, we also really love having guests on who share their passions and contribute to what we call the tangents and squee. So what you're going to hear is a compilation of clips from shows over the past year. In order, you will hear conversations with Jeff Barnes, author of The Wisdom of Walt and Beyond the Wisdom of Walt, discussing his books and Walt Disney, Beth Nolan of thecraftynerd.com from our episode about My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, Christopher DeFilippis and Albie Burge from the Quantum Leap podcast from our episode about Quantum Leap, and Colin Bricker from Cult Cinema Cavalcade from our review of Avengers Infinity War, a warning for minor spoilers. You'll hear a chime to note the transition between conversations. You can get more information about these episodes and us at thefiveishfangirls.com.
What I loved is, you know, it's a very informative book. It's not one-sided. You know, the person reading the book, you've put in, you know, activities and spots for people to write things and answer questions and be prompted to brainstorm about things. So it's very interactive, which I look forward to going back and trying to cram in as much as possible in the few lines that you've given me on the pages.
Well, thank you. And really, what we set out to do, I didn't want to write another Walt Disney biography. There are lots out there, and most of them are already good. And I didn't want to write another Disneyland history book, because, again, there are a lot out there, and most of them are already good. What I really wanted to do was to tell Walt Disney's story, and specifically the stories behind the parks, and connect it to the reader's story. Because as I say in my various presentations, I don't see the parks as the place where dreams come true. I see it as the place that's actually showing us how to make our own dreams come true. Mm-hmm. And so I don't go to Disneyland or Walt Disney World to escape. I really go there to be reminded of the example that's right in front of us. And so it's really a motivational and an inspirational text, way more than it's a biography or a history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's you know, something I appreciate about your approach to this, because, you know, I've heard so many different versions of, you know, for Disneyland, and I've been to Disneyland a couple times, and it's, and, you know, he always had that philosophy about making your dreams come true. And, you know, and a lot of people kind of say, well, that was great for Walt Disney. He was a genius on every level you can think of. But, you know, what about me? Like, mm-hmm. you know, how do I make my ideas work? And that's kind of what, you know, that's what I like about your approach, is like, hey, you know, Walt Disney, yeah, he was a genius, but he worked hard, and he was a, you know, a person just like you, and you can do, you know, whatever it is you want to put your mind to and accomplish, you can do it too. And so I like that approach that you've taken in the book.
Yeah. What really sort of keeps me awake at night is I'm haunted by the idea of Walt Disney sitting on that park bench in Griffith Park with his two young daughters on a Saturday afternoon. And he has this crazy idea of a place where parents and children could have fun together. And mm-hmm. what if he never gets off of that park bench? Or what if, when his wife Lily says, I don't want anything to do with an amusement park because they're dirty? Or, you know, what if, when his older brother says, you know, we're not building a damn amusement park, Walt, you know, what if Walt off of his bench, or he gives in to the doubters and the naysayers that includes his own wife and his own brother, then we never see Disneyland, and we never see Walt Disney World. We never see any of the international parks. And so what I am convinced of is that every person has that unique idea. Every person has that crazy thought. Every individual has some sort of dream. And the real difference between you and me and Walt is Walt got off of the park bench, and Walt had the courage to see his dreams come true, which meant he had to deal with all of the doubters and all of the obstacles and all of the adversity that we face each and every day. Walt just never gave up, and he was completely relentless in making sure his dreams come true. People don't realize Walt wasn't born successful. He had a very difficult childhood, and he failed far more often than he was successful. And those stories, I think, can really be the motivation and the inspiration. They can inform us regarding our own life, our own dreams, our own business, and our own families.
It's crazy how little plastic horses with really cheap hair.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
I remember my pink flocked Pegasus's, the soft ones with the wings. I think I still have one of those floating around.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember the first little pony I got. I think it was blue and it had butterfly wings, and I was maybe 7.
Oh, Flutterby.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, like I said, because I'm like, I see all these adults. I mean, like I said, I have a niece who watches it and loves it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just trying to figure out, like, is it nostalgia? Because I watched the My Little Pony cartoon from, you know, the 80s, or maybe it was on reruns in the 90s, but, and I'm just like, and then all of a sudden, My Little Pony was everywhere, just, you know, a handful of years ago, and I'm like, when did this become a thing? I'm just trying to figure it out, and, you know, why, and is it just nostalgia that people love it? Is there, you know, something else with the show? I don't know, I'm just curious, is, like, why so many people, you know, adults gravitate toward it. I can understand why little kids would like it, but I don't know. I mean, and I haven't seen a lot of, I haven't seen any episodes, so that maybe that's my problem.
Well, one of the things I especially like about my, like, well, when I first started watching it, actually, I just thought, hey, this is a really funny show. I'm really enjoying this. This is just so cheery and I like it. And then as they went on, they kept throwing in these little call outs to the fans and incorporating a bunch of, like, we had guest cameos, mm-hmm. like the doctor.
Dr. Hooves.
Yes, Dr. Mm-hmm. Hooves. And then, like, they had, like, three of the characters from The Big Lebowski in one episode. And it was just, like, ponies. Like, a pony version of John Goodman. I mean, how can you not enjoy that? Because that's not for kids. No kid is going to watch. If the kid's watching The Big Lebowski, there's problems.
Yes.
But,
good point.
But it's just, it's such a fun show. Especially just, I mean, again, back to Discord. I mean, he is cute. And it is so much fun to see just Q wreaking havoc on Ponyland, pretty much. But it's a lighthearted, amusing show that's just, I really like it. And I would watch it whenever, I'd watch My Little Pony whenever a new episode would come out, and I buy all the stuff. And it's just a fun little show that makes me feel good. And mm-hmm. I like it. And it just makes me happy. Mm-hmm. I can't have a bad day when ponies are involved.
I mean, yes, it's a cartoon. And they're, they're, like I said, they're like 20-minute episodes. So it's not, you know, not a lot of time to, you know, really dive into anything, you know, super deep or anything. But every now and then they touch upon subject matter. And it's not always necessarily very obvious, you know, what the moral of the story is. But they do mm-hmm. touch upon things like accepting those that are different. And, you know, being true to yourself, you know, always being honest. It's okay to have fun. That's the thing with the main six, is they all have these traits. They all have their very distinct personalities, but then they all have these personality traits that they all have, but each pony has one that's just slightly more stronger than the others. So Pinkie Pie, she's essentially the embodiment of having fun. She reminds people that it's okay to have a laugh and to find the joy in everyday things. Applejack is the honest one. She reminds people that honesty is always the best policy. Rarity, for all of her drama, she is the drama queen. She's the spirit of generosity. Know, giving to others. Fluttershy, she is the kind one. She's quiet. Mm-hmm. She literally is shy, although throughout the years seasons she has grown to become more assertive, which is a good life lesson as well. She's like Snow White, essentially. She's the Snow White pony. She works with animals and is just very, very kind and soft-spoken. Rainbow Dash is What about Rainbow Dash?
I'm trying to remember what Rainbow Dash's element of harmony is. It's not like bravery or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's something like that. But she's the athletic one. She's the the spirit, I guess, of friendly competition. She's the one that shows that, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing to be confident in yourself and your abilities. And then Twilight Sparkle, she's her element of harmony is the element of magic, because, she is a unicorn. Now she's an alicorn, which the unicorns, they have the horns and they're able to do magic. She and Rarity are the ones with magic. Twilight Sparkle is, all about, having friends and making relationships, strong relationships and positive relationships. Cause when the show starts, she sent off to Ponyville and she doesn't want to make friends. She's the bookworm. She just wants to study. She's Hermione Granger, essentially.
Yeah, or me. I totally identify with Twilight Sparkle. Yeah. I am a huge nerd.
Yeah. And she has to learn that, making friends is not a bad thing, and spending all your time with your nose in a book is not necessarily a bad thing. But at the same time, she shows that, reading books and enjoying learning is not necessarily a bad thing either. You look at the situations and the different storylines that they touch upon in Quantum Leap, and you kind of have to turn your head and scratch a little and be like, what are they doing? but then they also touch on some serious, subject matter. Oh, yeah. I love the discussion that you kind of got into in this last episode that you just released with Runaway, talking about feminism.
Mm-hmm.
Where you think Quantum Leap did a good job on touching on such a subject matter, considering it was a show that was pretty much ran by men, the stars were men, right. And it was produced by men, that sort of thing.
For the most part.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy that I'm able to talk to Allison about this kind of stuff, because I never know, being a man, I know this is made for, there's a certain amount of simpatico there, and I never know if, even if they're being as earnest as they possibly can, are they coming across as trite or condescending in any way? And when we were watching that Runaway episode on multiple viewings, I realized that this really isn't about, I mean, it touches on feminism, but it was about the husband, and it was about the husband's journey to understanding that there are other ways to think. So it was, once again, ostensibly aimed towards like a female issue, but at the end of the day, it was very aimed at a male audience. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, Quantum Leap pulls that sleight of hand quite often, and they do it so well that you don't notice. I brought this up on the podcast once too. Alva, you might remember this. In Black on White on Fire, you have this neat trick where it's a multiracial, a biracial relationship. But he questions it. Oh, that's the one where he's the black guy dating the white woman. Well, no, it's Scott Bakula and Corey Knights. you've got a 4-second mirror shot, but yet it's a biracial couple. And they were able to do things that were kind of dangerous, especially for network TV in those days, but do them very safely. Isn't that funny? That's just such a neat trick.
I don't think any other show could do it.
No.
Mm-mm. No, not at all. So, yeah, I mean, there's always more to find with Quantum Leap, and I find that when people discover the show, they get hooked by the weird premise. Okay, who's this? Is he a ghost? My friend Joe thought that Al was a ghost for the longest time. He's like, that's that show where he talks to the ghost, right? And I was like, no, it's a hologram. And he's like, what do you mean it's a hologram? But once they understand the premise, you know, they get over that initial blush, and then they sort of get into the issues that the show explores.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't have lasted this long if they didn't do it so well. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they really do get into a lot of meaty issues, but it's always fun and entertaining at the same time. It's never preachy. It's never pedantic. It's just,
I would be hard-pressed to name a show that walks as many lines as Quantum Leap did and did every one of them successfully, except for maybe Supernatural stuff. I don't think they ever did Supernatural stuff very well, but, you know. It's a great show. I mean, it's equal parts comedy, drama, and part. I've watched episodes, and I've literally, in the space of 10 minutes, laughed so hard I couldn't breathe and then cry, you know, and shows can do that. My favorite.
And we had, once again, Thor, Adventure in Space, but not with the Hulk this time, but with Rocket Raccoon and Groot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Thor can speak Groot.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that was one of the electives. I didn't know that was a language.
Yeah.
Thor's been around for 1,500 years.
Yes.
I think it's reasonable that he's picked up a couple of languages in that time.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe that's what I need to do. I just need to live longer, and I might find out I'm being able to pick up a foreign language.
Right?
Just takes 1,000 years, yeah. And then you're good.
I'm only 35, so I've got plenty of time.
Yeah, yeah. Don't worry about it.
I might finally get fluent in French one of these years.
Well, and just, you know, he's an angel space pirate.
Yeah.
That's not a guy. That's a dude.
Now he's like, no, you're a dude. This is a man.
Yeah.
Drax fell a little in love with Thor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to commit to that Bowflex. Get some dumbbells.
Poor Peter.
Well, they all fell in love with him except for Star-Lord.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, then when he starts trying to imitate Thor, everybody's calling him like, oh, I'm not. This is how I speak. Yeah, right.
Yeah, like, but that whole scene, I just felt like, did James Gunn write this part? Because this is spot
and
on
like,
Guardians.
I said that too afterwards. You know, I didn't see their names in the credits. Well, no, I think James Gunn was credited at some point in the credits. But
he's credited as a producer, but it was like under the same producer credit as
Stan Lee.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. But I almost wonder if like James Gunn and Ryan Coogler did not have some input as far as. Because, I mean, James Gunn has been the one instrumental with developing that more funny Guardians of the Galaxy and then Ryan Coogler did Black Panther, which has its own feel to it, yet, you know, the scriptwriters and the Russo brothers did a really good job at making sure that those voices that we recognize distinctly as Guardians of the Galaxy or Black Panther or Iron Man, that they kept those voices while still making sure that the whole thing is cohesive. But, so one thing I keep saying about this movie is on paper, looking at it, it should not work.
No.
At all.
It should be a train wreck, but
it should be the biggest of train wrecks, but it actually works. It's not perfect.
No.
But it works, and that is just... I don't know how they did it. How so many moving parts.
And you mean in the most nicest way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, this movie is not going to get nominated for Best Picture, but at the same time, it kind of should be because just such a crazy, complicated undertaking.
Yeah.
And it all made sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At no point was I confused about what was going on or the locations or the character motivations. Everything checked out. Absolutely.
Yeah.